Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
And today we have Pablo Rivera. Pablo is an accomplished software engineer who works for one of the top five consulting firms in the U.S. He's also a seasoned entrepreneur, having owned and operated multiple businesses. Pablo is now focused on leveraging his technical and business skills to help open source projects grow and prosper. Welcome, Pablo.
Hi, guys.
So, Pablo, why don't you give us a little introduction to yourself and tell us how you got started in the industry?
I started to code when I was 7 years old. I got a, you know, the typical story, kid got a computer, a Commodore 64, somehow stumbled into the huge manual that came with it, used it to kill cockroaches for a while, but then it one day, you know, it popped open and I read the manual. Started writing silly programs like, you know, my brother's feet smell and things like that. And then eventually I made it all the way through the manual. Took me, I don't know, I must have been like 19 years old when I was finished with it. But that's it. I mean, it snowballed into me wanting to go into video games. And then, you know, looking at the business side of software and so on and so on. The interesting point is that I never saw this as a career until I was in my late 20s. You know, I've always been a contributor to open source ever since I discovered open source and I discovered the internet. But I never saw myself as someone working in the industry because I lacked a degree. And in Puerto Rico, where I come from, the whole tech industry wasn't really something that existed. It was like the complete and total opposite of Silicon Valley. And so I'm sort of like a late bloomer when it comes to software.
And you said you were from Puerto Rico. I understand that you were displaced during the hurricane.
Yeah, you see this lady named Maria. I mean, like hurricanes don't have gender, but in this case, I'm just going to come out and say it. It just kicked us really hard where it hurts. And everything was just smashed into pieces. Every piece of infrastructure was hit, or destroyed, and all the systems, you know, all the social systems just fell. It's not that we fell into a sort of feudal or like anarchy or something like that, but you know, it went back to the basics. It set us back to maybe the 19 or the 18 something. And so, you know, my wife and I decided, well, mostly my wife decided that, you know, we should relocate and build a new life somewhere else. I depend on the internet to work. I had been working remotely for years from Puerto Rico with companies in Silicon Valley and pretty much everywhere around the world. And losing the ability to connect to the outside world, well, you know, that just... it shut down any opportunities I would have had. You know, I also was ready for a change. I lost my mom in 2017 to cancer. I just needed like to reset my life and reset my thinking and just find a new place to move forward and just crush it.
All right. So where are you now then?
I'm located in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a really nice place, but people don't know how to drive here. And coming from a Puerto Rican, that's a big words, you know, it's kind of like home, except people are nicer. It's the South.
Awesome. So what have you been working on here lately?
2 weeks after I arrived from Puerto Rico, I got a job. So I was sans job in Puerto Rico, and I spent about a month with no communication. The first time I was able to get communication, I tweeted that, hey, guys, I really need a job because I'm relocating. I landed around October 12, 13. I had a job that very same week. So I've been working on that, the job. It's one of the top consulting firms in the U.S. People ask me, are you lucky? I like to say I don't know because I just lost everything. But when I got here, I got a really nice job. I work remotely. The team I'm working with is amazing. You know, I can pretty much move to any other company after this one. I'm not saying that I'm going to move, but if I ever decide to move, I can go to any other company because it's just high up there in terms of, you know, brand name. And I mean, I just had to go through the hurricane to get that amazing bit of luck to work out. But I don't know, that's life. And I'm also working on something called Foskit, which stands for Free Open Source Software Kit. It's a project that's very close to my heart, and it has to do with figuring out why open source projects are always broke, ignored, and mostly unknown. And so I want to beat the stereotype of the broke open source maintainer, of the ugly open source software website, of the, you know, the like this whole stereotype where open source is just an amazing contributor to society and to the tech industry, but it's just ignored and treated like a dirty dog. And so I'm working with projects. I'm actively working with projects, just going one by one. I'm currently working with one right now called Beware. And this is an amazing project, by the way. I'll tell you all about it in a bit. But I'm working with this project and helping them, first of all, like talk about what it is that they're doing in a way that people understand, believe it or not. So open source projects have this difficulty of really expressing what it is that their project does. They talk to you in terms of tech, but they don't really tell you, you know, this does X and Y. They just wander around and have like this wall of text of explanations when, you know, a sales pitch of like an elevator pitch would work. And also figuring out the sustainability, which is a big deal in open source. I know probably dozens of open source developers who would love to work on open source full time, but are just broke because nobody will support them. And the truth is that I feel there are a lot of opportunities when it comes to supporting open source. I believe that there are ways to create sustainable product lines for open source that don't really mess with the licensing or with anything that has to do with the legalities of the project. And so with this project that I'm working on called Beware, the first thing I had to do was figure out in simple words what it is that the project did. And this is just the standard open source project. You know, you have a brilliant team of developers. I'm talking people who have been in the Django Foundation. I mean, these are like people who are probably 1,000 times smarter than I am. I mean, or more. And they have this technology that allows you to create native apps with Python. I'm talking about apps on iOS, on Windows, on Linux, on Android, and OS X. And they couldn't just figure out how to communicate that in a way that anybody who visited their site understood it within 10 seconds. And now, I'm not saying that they're stupid or that they don't know what they're doing. It's just that when you are a developer, you're used to the lingo. You're used to all this overhead, because I can talk with you guys right now and tell you, well, you know, I sent a post request, I had JSON, and, you know, what came back was a 200 and I had to parse it. But if you tell that to a normal person or a non-tech person, they don't know what's happening. If you tell that to a technical manager, they might probably not know about it. So for Beware, what I did first thing was, okay, let's define what it is that the project does. After reading all of the website, after trying out all of the technology, I said, well, you know, build native apps with Python. That's it. And it sounds really simple, but, you know, I called it the, and please don't think that I'm trying to be somebody else, but I call it the Steve Jobs approach to explaining tech. Like, remove all of the craft and just use tiny words. Just use small sentences like build native apps with Python. That's all you really need to use. And so that project is coming along really well. I'm about to start the sustainability phase, and I'm getting a lot of great feedback so far. And so, you know, looking forward to completing this adventure with them and then finding another open source project and repeating the process.
It sounds like with this Foss kit, you're kind of taking sort of like a marketing and documentation is kind of one of the strategies that you use to try to help these open source platforms kind of figure out and talk, communicate. What are the other kind of elements or strategies that you take and apply?
You know, one of the core components is definitely marketing and communications and documentation, which is part, believe it or not, your documentation is your marketing in a lot of ways, because that's the way that users, new users approach it. And that's the way current users approach the project. You know, like when developers talk about Stripe, and Stripe is a company that does like easy integrations for you to accept credit cards anywhere. All they say is, wow, we love the documentation. It's because it's very concise. It's full of examples. Any person can read it. I mean, I can pretty much come up with a really simple web store in maybe an hour using Stripe. And even if I need to roll it myself, because I know they have some ready-to-use stuff. And that helps the marketing of Stripe, because the people who actually do the integrations and push for that technology are the ones who are consuming that documentation. Other things that I'm doing, well, I see it this way. For me, an open source project is a business. It might not set out to build products for money. It might not start with a business strategy or a business plan. But for me, it's a business. And I approach it as if I were growing a business. That means establishing what it is that we're going to sell, defining it, finding the people who will actually buy this, talking with them, having a conversation, what it is that you want, what it is that you need, how are you going to use this? And then I work backwards from that and start developing a marketing plan. So, you know, everything from a business point of view, I know this might not be well received by some people in the open source software community, because the word business and money and, you know, all those things bring sort of negative connotation, because in the past, there have been people who have abused, you know, the good spirit of open source and the mild-mannered approach of the open source maintainer. In order to combat that, in order to give them the ability to trust me on that, I'm releasing everything as open source. That's why Foss is open source. Everything I do for them is open source. And if they want, I will give them the rights to all of my work. I don't even want to keep that. So that they can trust and they understand that this guy is for real. Everything he's doing, he's contributing to the project, not to us. He's contributing to a project. He's advising us. He's helping us. And he's not looking for a way to profit from us. One of the things I tell to people is that I'm not looking to actively profit from people or these projects. That's not really it. And, you know, it might be, some might not believe it, but the fact is, if it wasn't for open source projects, if it wasn't for open source code, I wouldn't have a career. I work with Django full time. You know, that's open source. If it weren't for Django, I wouldn't even have a job, because that's how all these things work. If it weren't for Linux, I would not have learned operating systems. If it weren't for Python, the language open source, you know, there's a lot out there that I've used to, provide, to put food on the table, and most of it is open source. So without it, I wouldn't be here. So this is me giving back.
Let's say I've got an open source project and I'm not making any money off of it, but it is starting to gain popularity and I'm having trouble keeping up. And, having that little extra money would help me keep my project going. How could I use FossKit to maybe foster the development of getting some money, either through contributions or whatever the goal is?
That's a great question. And sadly, the answer varies from project to project. because each project is, you know, reflects a lot on the people who built it. We tend to see software as something that's impersonal, but no, that's the thoughts and feelings of someone who wrote this code, you know, of a real person, like a machine didn't write this, a real person wrote this. And so we have to make some basic assumptions. Let's say that you have a .NET project, and I'm saying .NET because I know you guys like work in the .NET ecosystem. And by the end of the show, I hope that I'll convince you to move over to something else. Just kidding. I like to give Microsoft a hard time. It's just, you know, I lived through the 90s, so they can take it. And so let's make some assumptions. Let's say you have this .NET library that's for database connections, let's say for some new database. And there's a lot of adoption that's happening because your library was featured on a website, or suddenly there's a lot of industry people that discovered your library and they're enjoying it, right? And you have right now 300 tickets in your queue, 200 emails that you have to reply to. But hey, I have a full-time job, I have family, I have all these things happening, right? How would I approach that sort of situation? First of all, you have to be honest with yourself. Do you really want to make money from open source? Because you would be starting a business, right? You have to answer that. Am I committed to making money from open source? If you take donations or if you sell something, I think that you are starting a business. So be frank. Some people just want to write code, and that's absolutely fine. But if you really want to make money from it and profit from it, which is fine as well, then you have to be, you know, sure about this. This is not like a light decision. This is real because it impacts not only your life, but the life of your family. Second, if you're sure that you want to build a business, then you better prepare for that. One, within my plan, is to figure out a way that open source projects that are located in the United States can incorporate very easily. Like give them a roadmap where I can tell them, you need this document, this document, this document, and you can set up a corporation in order to protect your assets from any liability. Why? Well, turns out that there's a lot of bad actors out there that will try and sue you in order to you know, shake things up and get you to accept some terms that are not favorable to you or your project. Because something that you have to understand, whenever you start selling support for your project and your project starts becoming popular, you're competing with the likes of Microsoft, and you're competing with the likes of Oracle and a lot of other companies that some of them, not all of them, are shady. And they don't care. They will use every and any dark pattern there exists to, you know, to shake things up and take and own your property. And this is real. People think that this is not real. I've seen this happen multiple times with developers, open source developers being hired by companies, passing over their rights to their project and then being fired. So this exists out there in real life. After establishing your legal entity, I would talk to you and say, okay, you have, let's say, 1,000 downloads each month, and you're getting a lot of requests for support. And there's people are asking the same type of questions. Do you want to do something like consulting, which is the standard, approach that open source developers, you know, think about, which is like, hey, I can consult of how to implement my code in your code base. Or you have other options, and you would say, okay, I don't want to do consulting because let's face it, consulting is not something for the faint of heart. If you're doing it alone, if you're an individual, consulting is really hard because you have to take into account communicating with clients, meeting deadlines, figuring out schedules. It's a lot of work. You might say, no, I don't want to do consulting. What are other options? Okay. So you're getting all these questions and you see patterns. How to install this? There's an error that I'm getting. How do I do this with on this platform? How do I do this on Windows? How do I do this on Ubuntu? How do I do this on Red Hat? You know, like all these different things. I will sit down with you and say, okay, so you have here enough questions that warrant you sitting down and answering them, putting them into a manual, and selling that manual. And so with that, you have a potential product that you can do. You can start selling documentation to your project. Some people don't really like that. They want to keep the documentation open, which is fine, right? We can also go around that. You can take that documentation that you just did, put it up for free, and then publish a printed book or do additional documentation that goes into advanced topics in order to sell that. After we find a revenue channel, which is how I call it, a way to bring in revenue, then we would go into marketing that. You know, how do we create a community of people? How do we reach out to the marketplace? How do we talk to them? What kind of message are we going to send? And how do we reach them to get them to focus on these options that I just made available? And between all these things, well, I will look at your website. I will make sure that when people visit it, it's not something that drives them crazy. It's something that talks clearly about what it is that you're doing. I will also go through your whole code and find ways to simplify and look for shortcuts that can be taken in terms of developer UX in order to simplify the whole user interactions with your code. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could keep talking about. But mostly, yeah, just like a business. It's something that lots of developers out there don't want to go into because the whole business is GUI, thinking. They don't like business, but I'm a hybrid. I see things from both sides, and I'm not afraid of talking marketing at the same time that I'm going through a tech interview. And so I leverage that.
Do you think your background as an entrepreneur and your business skills help you kind of bridge that gap between business and marketing and technology?
Absolutely. When I was 13 years old, I was broke, right? Like most 13 years old are. And being that I lived in a barrio in Puerto Rico, right, which is like a lesser version of a ghetto for those, trying to make a mental picture, I really didn't have a lot of options. So I had to sell drugs or do gangbanging or figure out another way to make money. I ran the numbers, and turns out that you don't really make any money in drugs for the amount of risk that you take. So that was off the table, right? It was a very developer approach to making a decision. Okay, let's
try. So it's not financially responsible.
Exactly. What I finally decided on is sell stuff from catalogs. And this sounds really simple because that's what I did. I didn't look for catalogs. I just found a catalog, and just imagine this very introverted, quiet kid with this, desire to make some money because all I wanted to do was buy a bike, right? That's all I wanted. I didn't want anything else. I just wanted this really awesome BMX. And I was broke. So I have to, sometimes in life, you have to get off your own skin, just get out of your own body and sort of turn into this other person. And I did that. And I started selling from catalogs. And then I started to keep track of my sales in the computer. I started writing to one of those 5-inch diskettes. the real floppies. and suddenly, I'm making money. I'm making enough money to buy stuff. And I'm using software to aid my, pseudo business. And after that, the moment I was able to connect to the internet, my mind just immediately went into, how do I make money with this? Because you have to understand that when you're hungry, but not like hungry that I want to succeed, but really hungry, and you see people, you see kids going off to college, you see kids getting new cars, and when you don't have those things, you have to figure it out for yourself, right? And that was me. So I definitely have a mix of the technical and the business, and it's something I cannot separate. I cannot just be a standard business drone. But I have this absolutely insane drive to use technology and all the wonderful things that it does for us to try and make a living.
Do you have any advice to others just looking to get started in the industry?
Yes, run away. No, for real. No, okay. So let's be real. So tech is hot. Tech has been hot since the late 70s. It has its ups and downs, but it's hot, and it will stay hot for the next 100 years. And the reason is that in 100 years, we will have people stupid enough to have written code that writes itself, right? Like, we are working so hard to replace ourselves. And I think that is the biggest amount of stupidity I've seen in any industry. You don't see mechanics trying to have cars that fix themselves, right? But here we have whole teams of software engineers working on code that writes itself. I mean, give me a break. But tech is hot. Tech has a lot of opportunities if you know where to look. I started blogging. I started creating a presence online. I started talking about all the things that I was doing, even if it was just HTML. I remember the first gig I got was because I had a GeoCities website. You know, it might sound simplistic right now, but back then, HTML was pretty cutting edge. That's, you know, because the internet was new. People hadn't realized that software is the new media, right? That really hadn't clicked. They hadn't realized that TV was dead, that radio was dead, that everything else was dead, that software was the new media. Forget about all that. I started documenting my process. I started writing about what it was. I didn't really care what I wrote because I imagined that there would be no one paying attention, and most of the time there isn't. but eventually, I had enough work, enough posts that I had written in maybe a month or two that people could Alta Vista my name, not Google. And find some of that. And so document your process and go the opposite of what a regular software engineer does. Just do the opposite. And by that, I mean, don't try to look smart 100% of the time. That's the worst thing you can do. Don't try to be perfect with your code. You know, Linus Torvalds is still working on Linux after all of these years. He still hasn't perfected it. And that's the, you know, and he's an amazing developer right now. Like, he's one of the best managers there is in software. Like, he's still working on that project.
Do you have any upcoming speaking engagements or any other announcements?
I have a talk on the Developer on Fire conference that's coming up now in January 20-something. Dave Rail is going to kill me because I don't remember the date for the for the conference. You know, the talk is called Networking for Tech Nerds, for people who are bad at people. And it's getting a lot of attention because, you know, for some reason, there's a lot of people in tech that are bad at communicating and networking. I don't know if you met somebody like that, but I have. You know, being that I'm also one of those people, you sort of never move past from that, I think. I decided to create that talk. And it's not that I set out to do that talk from the start. It's that Dave had someone drop out as a speaker. And he just came to me and said, Pablo, you know, I need somebody to fill this in. Like, can you do this? And I said, yeah, I'm in. Like, I don't care what it is that you want me to do. I'll just do it. Who cares? And so I came up with the idea for that talk, and I should be recording it tomorrow or in 2 days, hopefully soon, because I gotta give it to them, you know, sooner rather than later.
If somebody did want to get in touch with you, or maybe learn more about FossKit, how would they do that?
they can go to Twitter. I am PR Yellow there. It's PRYELLUW. And the same username at Gmail, or PR@yellow.com. And if anybody wants to talk about anything, you know, my inbox and my DMs are open. I'm not against that.
All right, Pablo, thanks so much for being a guest on the Six Figure Developer Podcast.
Thank you for listening to me, and I appreciate you lending an ear.
That was Pablo Rivera. Pablo is an accomplished software engineer who works for one of the top five consulting firms in the U.S. He is also a seasoned entrepreneur, having owned and operated multiple businesses. Pablo is now focused on leveraging his technical and business skills to help open source projects grow and prosper. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash. We'll be right back.